from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you and by the Center for the Performing Arts, presenting the 2011-2012 season in three first-class venues.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Travis DiNicola. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Baselli Walrab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Sharon Gamble. Today, we'll kick off November with an all-Travis show.
Well, thank you. I'll meet the winners of the Indiana Authors Award, chat with Don Steffi about the Indianapolis Children's Choir, and get to talk with a panel of artists about nudes in art. And we'll also have our calendar we call
What'll We Do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. The 2011 Eugene and Marilyn Glick Indiana Authors Award in the National Author category went to Hoosier author Margaret McMullen. Helen Frost has also been named as the winner in the Regional Author category. The national and regional recipients, along with finalists in the Emerging Author category, were honored at the Indiana Authors Awards Dinner, sponsored by the Library Foundation, last weekend at the Central Library in Indianapolis. Travis DiNicola spoke with authors Margaret McMullen and Helen Frost about their work.
Congratulations to you both. This is very exciting. Helen being a regional winner, Margaret being a national winner. This is fantastic news.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks very much.
I want to start off by chatting with you both about what the work is that you're doing now. We've heard a lot about the Indiana Authors Awards of late, and we can talk about that in a minute, but I'm really curious about what it is you're both currently working on or maybe some recent work. Helen, I'll start with you.
Okay, the most recent published book, I write most of the books that I'm publishing these days are for children and young adults or teenagers. Mm-hmm. And the most recent publication was a book called Hidden, which is kind of a cusp of children and young adults. It's about girls who, in the first part of the book, are 8 years old, and in the second part, they're 14 years old. The story of a girl who's accidentally kidnapped and spends a couple of days in the garage of the person who kidnapped her. And then while she's there, his daughter discovers her, and the two of them sort of take an interest in each other.
The daughter of the kidnapper.
The daughter of the kidnapper and the girl who was kidnapped. The person who kidnapped the child did not realize he did it, because so he doesn't even know she's there, but his daughter figures it out. And then the heart of the story really takes place 6 years later when they're 14 and the two girls meet and have to put the story together between the two of them. So that's the book that's most recently published.
And the title of that again is that's Hidden? Is
it? Yes, it's called Hidden. It's published. It's by Farrar, Straus, and Giroux.
Okay. And Margaret, how about you?
Well, the newest book that's out there is called Sources of Light. And it's published by Houghton Mifflin. Houghton Mifflin Harcourt. They added the Harcourt, yes. And that's about a girl who's 14 years old. Her name is Samantha. And she and her newly widowed mother moved to Jackson, Mississippi. And it's 1962. And it's the beginning of the racial tensions there in earnest. Mm-hmm. It's right before everything is about to explode. But the problem is Samantha just wants to fit in to this new place and forget about her losing her father. And she really doesn't want to get involved, but of course she does. And she falls in love with the wrong guy. And her mother also falls in love. And I'm trying not to give away the plot, but
sure,
there is a murder. And we kind of know who did it, but we have to find out if it will be known to everyone.
Okay. And the title of that one again?
It's called Sources of Light.
Sources of Light. Okay. So what I'm really curious about with both of you is, as I was reading more about both your own histories as far as what you've written and novels, collections of poems, and certainly you've written books that are not for young adults, but it seems like a lot of the work that you're both doing lately is certainly for young adults. But even more interesting, what I'm finding is that it sounds like you're both really trying to tell stories from the perspective, using the voice of children or young adults. Mm-hmm. And you know, I'm not saying that neither of you are young adults anymore, but well, you're not. So tell me about what is it that drives you? And Helen, I'll start with you. What is it that drives you to try to take on that voice of a younger person?
Yeah. You know, I've always loved children, and I've always loved poetry. So what I'm doing now is just putting together these two things that I both know a lot about and care a lot about. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the heart of the work that I'm doing these days. So it's really an incredible privilege to be able to write for those kids, and then sometimes to meet the kids after they've read the books. And that's fun too.
Is it difficult to get in that mindset or to feel like you're making it authentic for that voice?
Sometimes it is difficult, but I've always paid a lot of attention to children and, mm-hmm. and teenagers, and
I know you work with a lot of kids.
Yeah, I worked with mm-hmm. kids for I was a teacher by training too, so I've had so many different children in my life between my own childhood and teenage years, which I do remember very vividly, and then I've raised children and I've taught children, and you have your kids' friends and your friends' kids, and there's a huge. I also have a really big family. My immediate family now is about 62 people. My siblings, their husbands and wives and children, and now some.
So do you keep
generation.
A notebook when you go to family gatherings, like write down things that the younger kids are saying? Or
Not exactly, but I mm-hmm. do listen. I love to listen to kids and just see kind of what's going on now. And, trying to keep up with the hardest part for me, I think, is trying to keep up with the technology of it. Mm-hmm. What would someone call their cell phone these days? Or, I don't know how important that is, but it's tempting. Maybe that's one thing I like about historical novels is that you don't have to
worry about the
well, you said no
at
when
that
there's
moment authenticity.
Yeah, although they have their own problems, but yeah.
And Margaret, a lot of your recent books, I think maybe the past four or so, are told from the perspective, I believe, of teenagers, different historical time periods. I mean, how do you get into that role? Because you're writing both from the perspective of a couple books. I know the main character is a girl, and a couple books it's a guy.
Mm-hmm.
Is that tricky to switch back and forth? I mean,
it's oddly easy to be a 9-year-old boy. No trouble.
And that's why I love this show, Well, tell me more about that.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about that. I really backed into it. I had written two books for adults before that, when Warhol was still alive and mm-hmm. in my mother's house. So one year, my grandmother was dying, and she called us all down to say goodbye to us, and she wanted me to help her clean out her closet. And she gave me this stack of pages that her great-great-uncle had written out, and mm-hmm. She wanted me to read them. This is my dying grandmother telling me to read manuscripts. Her great-great-uncle,
oh, wow.
And he had lived before, during, and after the Civil War, Frank
wow.
Russell.
Okay.
So I really hate assignments. uh-huh. I'm like my students in that way. And she died, and I finally read them, and that's when I started hearing his voice.
Yeah.
And he was the actual pages, he was like in his 90s when he wrote them, and he was kind of ornery and not very likable,
mm-hmm.
but he left out the Civil War because he didn't go to it. So I decided to make up what it was like to be a boy his age, Frank Russell, 9 years old, when mm-hmm. the Civil War broke out, and also living during a time when, everyone was getting the big adventure of a lifetime, and
sure.
he missed it. So I made up his childhood, and it was so much fun to do. And I had just had a son. It was one of the quickest books I've ever written, which was, I guess, it was a year. But I was also teaching, and I just loved mm-hmm. writing it. And it came to me as first person, 9-year-old boy, present tense. And
when you're doing that, do you, sort of actively try to think back to what it was like when you were 9 years old?
Or absolutely.
I want to go through old photographs or yearbooks or try to remember, what fourth grade was like. Or
I didn't have to even do that mm-hmm. much. It was pretty easy. I mean, we were raising our son and he was learning mm-hmm. how to read. So I used everything
mm-hmm.
and it really I was very familiar. I was very familiar with my inner 9-year-old boy.
Now I have not read that book. Is it in the first person or third person?
It's first.
Okay, so and that's interesting as well that you chose to write directly from that perspective.
Well, John Barth, who was a great writing teacher, has this wonderful formula which I didn't know at the time, but I do now. But he suggested that if you are really familiar with your subject, like yourself, then you should write from the third person so you have the distance that maybe you need, and maybe you're not so righteous with, you know, if you're writing about yourself. I've noticed that students tend to constantly do the right thing because it's the I, you know.
Sure, sure.
And then if you're writing about something you're not so familiar with, then write in the first person, and that will make you know that person. It'll also give your voice authority.
That's really interesting. I'd not heard that before, but that's a great sort of rule of thumb, I think, for writers. Helen, what do you think about that?
I just was fascinated by that idea. You know, I think that there may be some truth to that.
Yeah, call me Ishmael, you know?
Yeah.
Okay.
yeah. So I appreciate that.
Interesting. Yeah. So tell me what it means to you, each of you, to be recognized in this way with the Indiana Authors Awards. Helen?
It's such a confirmation. You know, I've lived in Indiana for about 20 years, and I've had so many different interactions with the world of literature and the arts in a wider way. And it's like someone is saying, you know, we appreciate you, you belong here. And the financial support is amazing, too, that there's actually, you know, that someone has funded this award to make it tangible to authors, you know, to keep doing what you're doing is what it feels like to me.
That's great.
Yeah, and the recognition of libraries. I love that aspect of it.
And it's also a great chance to meet other authors.
Exactly, the dinner will be so cool.
Margaret, how about for you?
It is so significant. Helen is so right, and it is a confirmation, and that's the perfect word for it. And it's also, it's a point of pride. It's a great spotlight to shine on books and communities that read and write, and to showcase other writers and the state itself for being sort of a cultural mecca. And you know, I can't think of one other state that has this significant award that is presented to authors. I mean, the Glicks have done a really heroic thing, I think, for arts and culture in the state. And that is just, you know, I can't applaud that enough. And I'm so glad, too, that the spotlight shines on the libraries, as Helen said, and, you know, and the universities involved.
Right, because part of the award, you actually get to share with sort of the library of your choice, right?
Choosing the library is really fun.
Tell me about the one that you chose.
Well, Helen? The Allen County Public Library, which is in Fort Wayne, which I love. And I was able to say that it would be divided between the children's department and the young adult department. So each of them gets that little nod and hopefully, you know, some chance to do something they wouldn't have done otherwise.
Excellent. Margaret?
Well, our library is the Evansville Vandenberg County Library, and they have been so good to me. They selected two of my books for One Community Reads, both How I Found the Strong and Sources of Light. So this is, I hope, a thank you to them for being so supportive, and they're so great with connecting readers and books. I mean, we were talking about that this morning, that the librarians will always be these wonderful, I don't want to say gatekeepers because that suggests that they're closing the doors. They're just this great link between the communities and books and literature.
Well, it's really great you get to share the award with them. That's one of the really exciting, unique things about the Indiana Authors Awards. Let me ask you each one last question. What's next for you? What are you working on now that you can share with us? Margaret?
Well, I have a novel, collected stories as told as a novel. Is that right? I should know this pitch better. Linked stories, called The Aftermath Lounge, and it's for adults, but it's about the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina on one coastal town in Mississippi. They're basically, I'm working on two books about set in Mississippi, and the other book that will hopefully find a home is called Crook. Which is about alcoholism and crookery.
Crookery?
People stealing from each other.
Okay. Mm. Very good. Well, look forward to seeing that. Helen, how about you? What's next?
Well, the next thing that I know will be published is coming out in March. It's a picture book collaboration with Rick Leader, who's a photographer, and he calls them portraits of insects, these really close-up pictures. So it's my text is just a single poem throughout this 32-page picture book that goes with his photographs. I think it's going to be a gorgeous book that'll be published by Candlewick in March. And then what I'm working on now doesn't have a title yet, which is not worrying exactly, but unusual for me at this stage. And it's set in Fort Wayne in 1812. So it has two characters. One is the son, a child of the Miami culture, and one is the son of a trader. And the two of them have I tried to go for a kind of simultaneity in the telling so that you hear both their voices reflecting off each other.
Travis DiNicola with authors Margaret McMullen and Helen Frost. McMullen was the winner of the National Author Award and Frost the winner of the Regional Author Award in the third annual Eugene and Marilyn Glick Indiana Authors Awards. To find out more about their work and the award, visit IndianaAuthorsAward.org, IndianaAuthorsAward.org. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio. As part of the Spirit and Place Festival, there'll be an art exhibit titled Unclothed, Exposing the Art Nude, opening this weekend at the Stutz Art Space. And in complement to the exhibition will be a panel discussion on November 11th about the place of the nude in public venues that will be moderated by The Art of the Matter's Travis DiNicola. As a preview of the exhibit and event, Travis invited artists Travis Little and Andy Chen to our studios to talk about nudes.
Been really interested and excited about this. And in a way, this is almost kind of like a preview, if you will, of the panel discussion we're going to be having on November 11th, but not quite. We'll get to that in just a minute. But Travis, you are a painter, Andy, you're a photographer, and you're both involved with the Spirit in Place exhibition, Unclothed, Exposing the Art Nude. Let's start with what was your interest first in getting together to put this exhibition on? Travis?
Last year, about this time, I was involved in a show in Muncie at the Art and Soul by Phoebe Gallery that was exclusively about the art nude as a subject for painting. And given the background that I have,
and most of your work is very representational, female nudes,
American contemporary realism, male and female nude, yes. And the experience I'd had in trying to promote my work and exhibit my work, finding a gallery that was actually going to feature this as the only theme was just bliss for me. And in doing that, and that the gallery closed a few months later, sadly.
Not because of you.
Well, we can speculate.
Sorry.
No, it was the other guy. That I contacted Phoebe and wanted to ask if I could kind of continue the spirit of the show.
Yeah.
To make sure that the idea had continued. So in bringing that to Andy and the rest of the board at the Stutz Art Space in the Stutz building, I said, let's do a nude show. And I was expecting, you know, we'll think about that. But they were actually very enthusiastic. And just so happens, as the blessing it may be, this year's Spirit in Place theme was the body.
The theme of the body, right. So very appropriate.
It all...
Timing's everything.
It is. And also then the framework that the Spirit in Place Festival gave with the engaging the public and dealing with cultural matters allowed me to bring in the other separate idea that I had always, more of a dream that I'd had of actually engaging the public in a forum so that equally both sides of the argument or the debate on censorship or First Amendment, artists' rights, those things could be addressed. And I was, through this, able to get a Dream Team panel discussion with full disclosure. Thank you, Travis, for
glad to be a part of
hosting the panel. Then that panel includes the keepers of the flame, so to speak, with Dan Cooper
mm-hmm.
and Shannon Linker.
Mm-hmm. Dan from IDOTA mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. Shannon from the Arts Council.
Mm-hmm. We also have Josh Shuler mm-hmm. from Nouveau Newsweekly, who is also Nouveau Newsweekly has also agreed to be our partner in this, as well as Dan Grossman. Both are representing the different the Janus of Nouveau, being the editorial mm-hmm. versus the marketing side, and the differences in their concerns about publication.
Sure.
And they do have mm-hmm. opposing viewpoints and interests to preserve. And also we have Tim Ayers from the community Grace Community mm-hmm. Church.
Mm-hmm.
Who is
pastor there?
Yes.
Now let's go. Let me go back to the exhibit itself, which has a First Friday preview, and at the Stutz Art Space, and is up through November 25th. And this show, does it feature just artists from the Stutz, or was it? Did you open it up beyond that? Andy, tell me a bit about that.
Yeah, for this show, we put out a open call to entry. Mm-hmm. So we had submissions from all around the state and some from outside the state as well. And from that, we selected work from 29 different artists. I think 13 of them are from the Stutz, and the rest are outside artists.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, Travis, you said you were wondering if people would artists would want to respond to this. I mean, I have a hard time imagining that any artist who's gone through any sort of academic training, you know, could do so without creating nudes at some point, drawing nudes, painting nudes, taking photographs of nudes. So, I mean, certainly it's something in an artist's repertoire. It's part of their basic training. But what made you think that maybe people wouldn't be so receptive initially?
There's a certain protection. There's a certain safety blanket in the academic world, legally, and it's more accepted as mm-hmm. as a theme, as one of the foundations of being an artist. But when you get out and you have market concerns, and you have to try to actually show outside of the sphere of academia, then it becomes a little different. It becomes challenging.
Nude is sort of part of the process in developing the skills, but maybe not always the product that's out there.
Yes. And as artists, then most of us tend to self-censor.
Mm-hmm.
We know that there is a struggle in certain areas and in this market. Specifically.
Andy, let me ask you about that. I mean, as a photographer, I mean, there's certainly that borderline there that's is even thinner between what's perceived as art and photography or art and pornography within photography,
mm-hmm.
As opposed to with painting and drawing. It's a little bit easier to distinguish. But how do you reconcile that? Or?
I don't know. photography is so often used in pornography, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there's so much to do with our bodies that is outside of even sex. I mean, you think of photography as like marketing and pornography when it comes to the nude. But there's, you know, my wife works as a nurse, and mm-hmm. you know, she sees nudity all the time, and I can tell you that very little of that is anything erotic, you know. So, and then when you come to art, there's just so much to explore, and mm-hmm. so I was really glad to see some of the submissions get broader than just the topics that we think of when we think of nudity.
What's something that comes to mind? That's something that's like a really interesting piece or work or approach that you've seen in putting together this show.
One piece is by a Stutz artist, John Ross,
mm-hmm.
and it's from a photograph he took in the 70s of this couple in front of their motorcycle,
mm-hmm.
their new motorcycle. Mm-hmm. And so he painted it as them nude with the motorcycle in the Garden of Eden. And so it's just this real kind of weird, almost kind of kitschy look
mm-hmm.
At the situation of like this pride in a thing, and yet they're exposed, and you've got this garden setting of, you know, just how you deal with these new possessions and who you are.
Interesting. Travis, you, this seems to be a topic that you give a lot of thought to.
I have to in considering my place in I'm very active in this art community,
mm-hmm.
so and in the world art community, it isn't that much of a deal. It's a lot more accepted. But in working here, I have
in
to
Indianapolis,
give, in Indianapolis, mm-hmm. and central Indiana, I have to give it some consideration. And interestingly enough, most of the issues that I've had in displaying have not come from public reaction or people bringing out the torches and the pitchforks. It's actually been within arts organizations that I've dealt with in saying, no, we have to keep this family friendly. We need
in
to
terms of exhibiting the work.
Exhibit, yes, that it needs to be accessible, that there's just not a market, therefore there's not an interest in commercially, it's not commercially viable. So there's been a lot of opportunities that I've been denied even before the public had the opportunity to react.
Just because you're dealing with the nude.
Just because.
Now, and again, I mean, your work, I mean, I certainly don't think of it as at all anywhere close to being pornographic, but it is very sensual. I mean, you're dealing with very, you know, sensual, you know, as we, as you said before, both male and female figures, nude forms, very lusciously painted. I mean, it's, I mean, they are, you know, very sort of sensual works. So what is the type of, you know, so what the reaction that you're getting from galleries, from organizations saying that they just don't want this to deal with the questions of potential parents walking in with their kids into a gallery space, or help me understand sort of, you know, what the reaction that you're getting.
Their interest is in trying to protect their ability to bring art to the masses, to be able to represent it without having that interrupted, without having to deal with small issues, even though if even one or two people, you know, who are causing...
Possibly take some offense.
It's just distracting. Doing art and promoting art is involved enough without having to deal with the possibility. So there's a lot of arts organizations, I feel, that play it safe.
Play it safe, sure.
But this, with the exhibition that we're putting on, it's really it's been very important to me. As an artist, I also understand that I have my viewpoint, but I also do understand that there are certain organizations that have to be careful about protecting their own viability, that have certain interests that they have to consider. I'm not saying that they're necessarily, that I believe that they're always right in putting that as a priority. But there are concerns, and I'm not sure that both sides of the argument, if we want to be as black and white to say there is side A and side B, I'm not sure that they always understand the positions and the considerations that the other opposing viewpoint has.
But it sounds like you're also acknowledging that that maybe there are some spaces run by certain organizations or for certain audiences where maybe nudes would not be appropriate? Or at least you can understand why they're thinking that way.
I can understand why they're thinking that. And it's important that with this exhibition that we ask the question, what is the place? And that is the theme, is where does this belong? How do you feel? I'm not sure that all organizations understand that relatively, I think the public reaction would be very positive to this. And I think a lot of organizations and people who promote art don't always understand. They fear the things that we've seen in places like Cincinnati and with other works where things have been chains on doors.
Sure. Are you referring back to in the early 90s with Mapplethorpe and Cincinnati? Or
As one, yes.
So with this exhibit, is there, Andy, let me ask you this, is there a disclaimer or a warning that families will encounter as they enter? Or have you guys decided on that?
Well, the description pretty much says that it's focused on nude artwork.
You would kind of think that would be enough, right?
Yeah.
But just wasn't sure, you know, if you're going even farther than that, just to...
In warning people or in saying, you know, oh, be careful, you may not like this, it would seem to support the wrong viewpoint that there's necessarily anything wrong with this. It's a decision that everyone should be able to make, and they can make for their children, and... that knowing coming in, they don't have to come. We encourage everyone, even people who don't care for the art nude, I'd like them to come and see if they leave feeling the same. I'd like them to engage in the conversation, hopefully minus rotten fruit, but that they, to engage, to actually engage with the artist exhibiting, to discuss all sides of this, to have an opinion. And I think when that question is able to be answered, then we can be ready as a community to actually understand what the community standard is, because that question hasn't been answered as much. This year, with the Fred Wilson sculpture and with Faust's Chrysalis piece. Those are the big topics of art discussion. It hasn't been on the nude. And
right. Now, to be fair, in both cases, those are public artworks, and there's been a lot of discussion about where they're located or what the message is with Fred Wilson's piece, but with the Faust piece, you know, physically where it's located. And we're not talking about putting necessarily, I mean, that's a whole different conversation as far as nudes in as public artwork,
yeah,
as opposed to nudes within a gallery exhibition.
We are not being that specific on talking about public funding or anything. We're just asking the bold question, where does this belong? And I didn't mean to draw a direct line between those pieces, but rather saying that we are very passionate about the sociopolitical, about artists' rights, and about those things, but the actual topic of the art nude itself isn't something that really is stirring in the public dialogue.
And I think you make a great point, and it's something that I want to make sure we bring up when we do have this discussion on November 11th with the panel, is what is the community standard here in Indianapolis? And that's a great question to explore.
Travis DiNicola with artists Travis Little and Andy Chen. The exhibit Unclothed, Exposing the Art Nude, opens this weekend at the Stutz Art Space. The related panel discussion takes place at 7 p.m. on November 11th at the Stutz Art Space, and both events are part of the Spirit in Place Festival and are presented through a partnership with Nouveau News Weekly and KLF Legal. For more information, visit spiritandplace.org. That's spiritandplace.org. In the spirit of Spirit and Place, here's our calendar we call. What do we do?
Very good, Sharon. What do you got?
Well, in the spirit of Spirit and Place, don't forget to go out and see or take in as many of the themed presentations as you can. The theme this year is the body. I'm psyched about Honoring the Body in Death, which is coming up Monday night from 7 to 9 at Second Presbyterian Church, and it's going to discuss different funeral rituals and burial practices in Jewish, Muslim, and Christian traditions.
Very cool. Yeah, there's so much going on with Spirit in Place. You can check out spiritinplace.org. One of the things that I find really exciting is up at the JCC, and they are having the Ann Katz Festival of Books, which is going on right now as well. Something else going on that's kind of fun is the Junior League of Indianapolis is having their holiday mart this weekend at the State Fairgrounds, the Marsh Blue Ribbon Pavilion, and lots of great shopping and things that benefits the Junior League and the charities that they work with, but lots of good shopping as well.
Love that. Hey, if you're hearing us on Friday night, scurry, change shoes, and go out to First Friday. A lot of the galleries are open later tonight. You can do a little bit of holiday shopping. If you're hearing us on Saturday, you still have lots of time this month to take in Costumerie, which is new work by Kyle Ragsdale. Kyle always is a key part of the Harrison Center's First Fridays, but this is a big show of his own work, so go check that out.
Yeah, that should be a lot of fun. I can't wait to see that show. Hey, something that's really cool that's coming up on November 11th, Park Tudor is working with some kids that are part of the Villages program, and they've transformed a whole bunch of these chairs into art to benefit kids who have suffered from abuse. It's a really neat auction. There's also a reception involved. It's all about raising money to help these kids, taking place Friday, November 11th at the Indianapolis Arts Garden. You can get more information at villageskids.org, and again, it's called Cherish the Children. That's Cherish with a C-H-A-I-R,
like
a chair, you see. Isn't that very cool?
That's darling.
Yeah, so villageskids.org.
Hey, here's an evening of opera, Examining the Things We'd Be Willing to Die For, Life, Love, and Liberty. It's called Opera's Not Dead. It is also part of the Spirit in Place Festival on Wednesday, the 9th, from 7 to 8:30 at Aaron Reuben Nelson Mortuary. What a place for opera, I'm just
saying. There you go. That should be interesting. Hey, out at the Warren Performing Arts Center on Friday, November 18th, they are having the 23rd Annual Tree Fest, and this features all sorts of decorated trees from 10-foot timbers to tiny little 2-foot trees, all created by different artists and celebrities, and they're auctioning it off, and there's a teddy bear picnic and all sorts of fun things going on at the Warren Performing Arts Center as part of their 23rd Annual Tree Fest.
We need little tiny teacups for teddy bear picnics.
Yeah, it's actually Friday the 18th through November through the 22nd.
They eat those little tiny corn on the cobs that you find in Chinese food. Speaking of the holidays, the Stutz Artists Association wants to lure you away from the chain stores and wants you to get out from behind your computer and actually support local artists. They are kicking off their holiday shopping season on November 18th from 5 to 9. That's a Friday night, free admission. You can support local artists and buy great things as gifts as well.
And the last thing we got time for, just want to let you know that if you hear a drum beating, it's probably because the Percussive Arts Society is welcoming over 6,000 drummers and percussionists from around the world to Indianapolis next week from the 9th through the 12th as part of their 50th anniversary of the Percussive Arts Society. So welcome, drummers.
Can't beat that with a stick. Oh, I'm sorry.
And we'll be back next week with more of
What'll We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on WFYI.org.
The Indianapolis Children's Choir has designated their 26th concert season their Kaleidoscope of Song. Travis DiNicola spoke with their executive director, Don Steffi, about the season.
Indianapolis Children's Choir now is a 25-year-old organization founded by our current artistic director, course founder, Henry Leck. It is one of the world's largest as well as most substantial children's choir around the country. There's probably about four others in the United States that sort of rival our work, but it's an internationally famous children's choir. We serve, and we say the Indianapolis Children's Choir as our corporate name, but there are 16 different choirs.
16?
16 choirs, okay, that comprise the Indianapolis Children's Choir, mm-hmm, singing. And that's
different age groups, different age styles.
Total. From fourth grade through high school.
Okay.
And then we are also a music education organization. So therefore, we have a preparatory choir program for first graders through third graders. Again, it's a process that takes them into the choral experience, but also really gets into understanding music, reading music, and they're tested. It's a very curriculum-based organization. Mm-hmm. We also have a preschool program. So we have a kindergarten program, and it's based under the philosophy of a gentleman named John Feyerabend. Obviously, a little more play, a little more fun. And yet underlining all that is, again, this curriculum-based education. But the preschool program goes down to 18 months.
What?
So, Travis, yes, the Indianapolis Children's Choir now serves children 18 months old
to
18 years. It's only 1 year new.
Okay, because I don't remember hearing about this before. And I certainly believe in the importance of early childhood education, yeah, and certainly understand, especially the role that the visual arts play in early childhood education. This is new for me, so help me understand how a choir works with an 18-month-year-old.
Yes. Well, and now I don't teach it, mm-hmm, and we certainly have qualified staff that do, but our 18-month-old program, even up to the 3-year-olds, it is a program designed for the parents' involvement.
Okay,
so obviously with an 18-month, they're not just going to lay on the floor, yeah, and a teacher teaches them. But the younger children, the 1-year-old, 2-year-old, 3-year-olds,
I just have this vision of all these, like, I know, toddlers like crawling around the, you know, the choir stands and anyways, yeah, and the risers. Okay.
Yeah. So they get together and it really, it's more hearing music, mm-hmm, exploring rhythms, exploring, especially for the very young, what music does to their sensory motor skills and, mm-hmm, so on, but the parent as well. So
how
they have
cool
homework. The parents and the little children go home and they have exercises they do together. So in one respect, it's also, especially at the very young level, a family bonding moment.
I think that's terrific.
And it's taking and bringing
great
music into their home.
Mm-hmm.
So it's building a culture of music as well. And of course, you know, they might have a sibling who's kindergarten, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
Well, for the Indianapolis Children's Choir, it's a way for us also to start to incorporate music quality music into the lives of young people, and eventually, whether they want to continue on through our programs, or it just starts to give them a foundation, as you're saying, that gives them an awareness inside themselves to become really a whole individual. And so it's a great, great program that we
Very
have.
Very cool.
But it is cool. And we just experimented last summer, a year, 14 months ago, if you will, because the request came. Actually, everything that the ICC has ever done has really been at the request of our constituents.
Mm-hmm. And you have something like, what, 2,500 kids?
We serve 2,500 children.
Wow. It's a lot of families.
A lot of families, and it reaches over 18 different counties throughout central Indiana. It affects over 320-some public and private schools and homeschoolers. So it's a huge reach that we have. But it's great that we do. We also have a teacher advisory board, which incorporates over 30-some schools and school corporations. We are there as a catalyst to help keep music back in the schools. It's our mission not to try to do anything to replace music. Music in the schools helps our program.
And
we work in tandem.
With those school choirs and
with the school choirs and school teachers. We offer at no cost a program called Innovations, where we can go in and do professional development for teachers, as well as experiences for the kids, for their choir program, or just individual classes to just help them. We on our website, which is icchoir.org, I-C-C-H-O-I-R.org, people can go on that website right now as we're talking to learn all these things we're going to be talking about, including our upcoming season.
Right.
But anyhow, under the teacher, we have a teacher's tab, which gives teachers choral exercises, ways to help them learn, that we've had many teachers tell us we cannot even get a requisition to go out and do, you know, day professional development anymore because there's these budget cuts.
But they can get this sort of information through you guys.
Right through us.
Which is a terrific service. Now, you call Butler University home.
We do.
That's where you're located.
We are. We're located. We have offices and two studios located on the campus of Butler in Lilly Hall. And all that was birthed about 7 years ago out of a wonderful capital campaign that both Butler was doing, and we integrated with them.
Connection with the university.
It's a great connection with the university. And and what is so cool is our artists, if you will, of course, come after school. So we have these two wonderful studios that then...
And they get to come and be on a campus. And
they come on. Mm-hmm. And then the Butler University students use our studios in the day. So those studios are used from morning through night.
That's great.
And all on the weekend. And it's a great marriage with Butler University, which... Henry is the head of choral studies at Butler University, and he's been a faculty member as long as he founded the choir, really. And so so it is a great – and, of course, and I say this in an endearing way, but when you have 900 – there are 900 students who actually come onto the campus in the course of a week – well, they're coming on to Butler University.
Yeah.
And so there's future students, no doubt.
Well, certainly. Now, over the 25 years that the Children's Choir has been performing, people have seen them many places. There's a great documentary done on WFYI about them. I know that I saw the choir when the Palladium opened last year, which was very exciting. Most recently at the ceremony for Dan Weldon that was held at Conseco, that the choir was invited to sing at that. I didn't get a chance to be there, but I heard it was very moving.
It was extremely moving, and so many people either had heard about our reputation, but say they're not concert goers. Well, that day the word was, I heard they were great. I had no idea they were this good. So it was a good thing.
Well, that's
for
really
us.
Beautiful that the choir got to be a part of that.
It really was. Yeah. It was a touching moment for the kids to understand the experience. And this happens a lot with the choir. It's just a great thing. But where I was going with all this was to loop us into the season.
Yes, tell us about that, because now when this is airing, it's actually the weekend of when our interview is airing. It's the weekend of the Celebrate America concert, which is taking place on Saturday, November 12th at 7 p.m. at the new Indiana Landmark Center.
Yes, and it's gorgeous. If people have not been down to the Indiana Landmark Center, which, of course, the late Bill Cook had helped fund the beautiful renovation. We're doing Celebrate America. It is an evening that celebrates American culture and American music. It's not necessarily a patriotic night, so to speak, like the Stars and Stripes kind of evening. However, in honor, the day after Veterans Day, we are giving, you have to request a ticket, but all veterans can come to this concert free of charge.
Very good.
And they just get a hold of the ICC office or go on our website. And so we are going to have a couple songs specifically geared towards that patriotic tone. But it really is about Americana,
mm-hmm.
and jazz, as well as on our press release, we have a group coming up from Bloomington called Fiddle and Feet. And a fiddle.
So they're a lot of fun.
They're coming up.
Tamar Lowenthal.
Yes, Tamar Lowenthal. Mm-hmm. So they're going to be fiddling and the clogging. And so
nice.
It's that kind of night. We're very excited that Martin Ellis, one of our major accompanists,
don't have to have a kid in the choir to enjoy these concerts.
No, not at all, Travis. Yeah. Not at all. We've had a number of people. Last year we had a great concert. It was an evening of jazz music. It was our winter concert. And we had more people come out because of that theme. This year, we call it Voices of Youth, and it's at the Hilbert Theater in March 18 to be exact. I diverse a little bit, but the whole season is open to subscribe.
Mm-hmm.
Single ticket sales are on sale right now. But that concert features a band that a lot of your listeners may know called the Irish Airs.
Oh, they're great.
And
yeah,
so,
that's going to be a lot of fun. I saw that. So, right after St. Paddy's Day.
Yes.
That'll be a great concert. This is all part of your Kaleidoscope of Song series.
It is. Kaleidoscope of Song is taking just an open look at all of the many genres that ICC can and will perform. We wanted to do something in our 26th year,
mm-hmm.
that moved away from sort of the silver anniversary,
sure.
of our 25th year, and really go into this colorful look into the future and the rich heritage that Henry and all the artistic folk have built over these 25 years.
If you would, Don, just briefly,
yep.
Walk me through a couple of the other upcoming concerts, because of course you have the Angels Sing, which is the holiday concert, which
is a very
important one.
And on that one, let me add that on Angels Sing, we have added, because of selling out several seasons, a matinee for the Angels Sing concert, never before
mm-hmm.
had. It was two evening concerts, and so we have added a 3:00 matinee for Angels Sing. We're hoping also that a lot more of the senior community might come out.
Well, that'd be great. And that's the weekend of December 16th and 17th.
Yes, and mm-hmm. that's over at St. Luke's United Methodist Church, just a great, great location. Again, I mentioned Voices of Youth at the Hilbert Theater. We have two wonderful performances called Hear Our Song at the Crystal DeHaan Fine Arts Center. A real rich, it's at the end of our season, so the quality of these singers, of course, is just increasing over the year.
Of course.
And it's just a great, refined evening of classical choral music. Spring Celebration is fun. It's our younger choirs. So if anybody wants to come out.
And that'll be in May at the Pike Performing Arts Center.
At my old stomping ground, Pike Performing Arts Center. And that one is fun because you see this progression of young voices who will eventually be the future
mm-hmm.
of our touring choirs. For ICC, and then our choral festival concert. This is a great way to wrap up this the whole season. It's in June 16th, at Clues Memorial Hall. This wraps up a week-long choral festival camp.
Okay.
So when you mentioned about kids being involved, our choral festival camp is a great way, it's a week-long camp, to get kids engaged in the fun of choral music. Those kids, those little campers, and there's usually 300 to 400 of them,
mm-hmm.
are engaged in the concert at the end. And then our major choirs, which number about 700 to 900 kids, all come at the end and do a big finale piece at Clues. But that evening also has many of the choirs performing individually throughout the night. It's a great, great series, Kaleidoscope of Song. I do invite people to come to our kickoff performance, as you mentioned, Celebrate America, November 12th, Saturday night, 7 p.m., Martin Ellis, who plays for the ISO as well and for their Yuletide, he's going to be on the brand new renovated organ, restored organ.
Just fantastic. Yeah, at the Landmark Center?
At the Landmark Center. So really, people can call our phone number at 940-9640. That's 940-9640 for tickets. But, of course, like anybody, go online. Mm-hmm. You can purchase tickets at our website, icchoir.org. That's I-C-C-H-O-I-R.org. You can learn about all the programs we talked about.
Well, let me ask you one quick question, yes. John, because I know that now you're already, you know, into the season. The kids have been rehearsing, and with the different choirs, auditions are required. But if there's a student out there who really wants to get involved in the choir, what do they do at this point of the year? I mean, is the best thing just to come to some of the concerts and find out if it's what they like, or is there a way for them to get involved?
It is a good thing for them. They can come any time. And our audition really is like an assessment. It's mm-hmm. really to see if they can match pits. I mean, you sing Row, Row, Row Your Boat, we take it from there because, again, we are a music education organization.
So except for my age, I would be eligible.
Except for your age,
right,
Travis,
okay.
Although
okay.
a lot of our alumni are now your age. Uh-huh. That's all. And they should call any time because they can come in and get assessed, and then they'll say to them, well, second semester would be the better time mm-hmm. or what have you. Or if they're in between concerts, sometimes they'll say to a child, you can come in now because, say, they've assessed at a good level.
Yeah.
But they'll be very open. They keep a running list. And if they have to wait the second semester, then they say, you know what, come to these concerts. If it's midwinter, they'll say, you know, come to these concerts, but you know what, let's get you at Choral Festival, get you involved in our summer choir camp.
Okay.
And so any time that someone is motivated and they have a child, our choir program does begin at fourth grade on up, but again, our preparatory choir program, first through third grade, is a great way to start getting engaged with the ICC. We also have regional choirs in all of the connecting counties around Indianapolis.
Oh, excellent. Good. So that makes
Hancock
it very convenient.
Hancock Regional Choir, you know, Boone County Regional Choir, Hamilton County Regional Choir, and those are beginning intermediate level choirs that are sort of feeders.
Okay.
But it gives a chance for people on the outskirts of town and mm-hmm. the outskirts of these counties to, before their kids get committed, how committed do they want to be?
Sure.
And it's a good
test
way
the water
for them,
a bit.
Test the water. It's a great for way for people to get engaged.
Travis DiNicola with Don Steffi, the executive director of the Indianapolis Children's Choir. You can get more information about their Kaleidoscope of Songs season at icchoir.org. That's I-C-C-H-O-I-R.O-R-G. Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buselli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter again next Friday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 4 when I'll find out what's going on and what's coming up at the Center for the Performing Arts in Carmel.
I'll find out what's going on and what's coming up at the Bonna Thompson Center in Irvington.
And then I'll chat with Indiana's next poet laureate, Karen Kovacic, about the work she's doing with the Writers' Center. Plus, we'll have our arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? So please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here on WFYI for your information.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you and by the Center for the Performing Arts, presenting the 2011-2012 season in three first-class venues. The Art of the Matter. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's Art of the Matter was produced and edited by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter on 90.1 FM, Indianapolis.